Red Line.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and its weekend program, The Red Line, with me, Andrew Kurupko.
And Sergei Strokhan.
Welcome to today's program. This is what we want to highlight as the news-breaking stories of the week that proved to be extremely tense, dramatic, and controversial. Sinking barrel. Who will pay for cheap oil? Falling oil prices reach a 12-year low and are sending shockwaves through the world's stock markets and fueling heated debate on who stands to lose more in the worst market crisis in a decade. Poland, the black sheep of Europe? Poland is rocked by nationwide protests against the new government's judicial and media reforms and the passing of new legislation on surveillance, all of which has come under sharp criticism from European leaders. And also, Hassan Rouhani to Europe with Dove. President Hassan Rouhani paid his first trip to Europe after the lifting of the anti-Iranian sanctions and offered an olive branch to Italy and France by welcoming their companies to the vast Iranian market. So let us come to our first section, Beyond the Headlines, to speak about the energy crash and how it's impacting the global economic and political arenas. Falling oil prices reach a 12-year low and are sending shockwaves through the world's stock markets and fueling heated debate on who stands to lose more in the worst market crisis in a decade. Oil is trading at around $30 a barrel or so, significantly lower than it was 18 months ago when it averaged about $110. Saudi market manipulations and U.S. shale gas are partly to blame for the crash, but regardless of who is ultimately responsible, everyone agrees that certain countries are taking quite a hit, especially Russia. The ruble has dropped to a record low against the dollar, and concerns are being voiced about the budget, which was made in the assumption that the price should be $50 a barrel. On the Western front, Wall Street has been sluggish, and there's a fear that a mass bankruptcy in the shale oil sector could herald a new global economic crash way worse than the one in 2008.
Obviously, Andrew, nosediving oil prices remain hot button issue. That was last week. We've seen similar situation this week. We were awash with reports circulating apocalyptic scenarios over Russian economy over falling ruble.
Really,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So how many publications we've seen that free fall of ruble, Russian economy collapsing like that? Obviously, oil prices going down is a bad news. That's clear situation. But at the same time, I am not subscribing to that pessimistic, too pessimistic scenarios. I understand the situation is pretty serious, but let us not over-dramatize the situation. I personally think that ruble is doing relatively good compared to other currencies like Brazilian,
Turkey, Indonesia.
Yes. But while those nosediving oil prices are bad news, I think that a good news for us, if I can call it good news, is that we have a subject to discuss. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And as you put it, yes, the main question is who will pay for cheap oil, meaning who will benefit and who stands to lose most of all. Those questions should be addressed, first of all, along with the questions, why are oil prices so low and why markets are terrified? That's also another story. So very briefly, from my point of view, what is crucial is that demand for oil is highly correlated to economic activity, which currently is looking rather weak if we're looking in cyclical terms. So in practical terms, it's very simple. More goods get produced, more get transported, and more people drive to buy them or deliver them. And I've checked the statistics, you know, let me just, here it is, yeah. Look, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, about 75% of the petroleum which was used in the United States in 2014 was for gas, heating, oil, diesel, and jet fuel. So that shows the situation in flux and how one comes from another.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, it's such a hot-button topic, and I feel it's being, you know, it's not being addressed the proper way by a lot of pundits from the West, so that's
yeah,
why...
Yeah, because we have a lot of conspiracy theories, we have a lot of political speculations over that.
So well, there are people that have self-interested agendas that they're trying to promote here, and that's why I'm very glad to speak to our in-studio guest about this, and that's Mr. Andrei Fyodorov. He's Russia's former deputy foreign minister and director of the Center for Political Studies think tank here in Moscow. Hello, Mr. Fyodorov. How are you?
Hello.
Hi. So, you know, as you know, we're discussing the oil price and its impact on the Russian economy. You know, we see that the ruble has been affected. So where do you see all of this heading, and how do you think the government will respond to this?
First of all, I would like to say that according to the preliminary governmental calculations, with a price of oil around $30 per barrel, Russia will lose this year about $70 billion. So the impact is very clear. But the situation is not tragic because for our oil industry, real deadline, drop line, let's call it.
Red line,
yes. Might be about only $20. So $20 is a real will be a real shock for Russian economy. But with $30, $35, with a new anti-crisis plan, which is produced by the government, Russia can survive. Of course, with this low price of oil, for solving social problems and to pay the price for the elections to the parliament, to the State Duma in September, Russia will use its reserve fund and its other resources. And from this point of view, 2017 might be much more problematic than this one. Yes, of course, it was a miscalculation to think that oil will cost $50 per barrel.
Too optimistic scenario.
Yeah, I already met in end of June last year in Vienna, Iranian oil and gas minister, who told me that time that Iran, after sanctions, will sell oil on the level of $30 per barrel or even lower, because they want to return their share of the market. And they don't care too much about the price now. They care about coming back. Although this is happening now, plus slowdown in China, etc. I would like also to mention one thing. There is some kind of, misinterpretation that the price of the shale oil, when the price on oil is low, shale oil extraction in U.S. is non-reasonable. It's non-reasonable only for small companies, which are going for bankruptcy. But for the big corporations, $30 is okay, because the shale oil they can produce, they can get it for $20, $22. So it's not the end of the shale revolution, shale oil and shale gas revolution in the United States. Vice versa. The new cheap oil prices are pushing forward new technologies.
Very interesting.
And that's why this will be a long-term process, and that's why we cannot expect that the price on oils will come back to $100 per barrel.
You know, I'm very glad that you brought up shale gas because we have an energy expert on the line with us to comment more on this, and that's Mr. Justin Dargan. He's a global energy scholar at the University of Oxford.
Red Line.
Hello, Mr. Dargan. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you. So, you know, we've been speaking with our in-studio guest, Mr. Fedorov, about, you know, the impact of low energy prices, and now we've just started talking about shale gas. And as a global energy expert, can you tell us more about the effect that shale gas has had on the market, and how responsible is it for the current drop in energy prices?
Well, I mean, one thing that we have to realize is that the shale gas and oil production boom was a revolution, indeed. And we have to look at, in this regard, if we go from 2009, when the U.S. was producing about 5.1 million barrels of oil per day until about 2015 or so, early 2015, the U.S. was producing, let's say, about 9.1 million barrels per day. So that's quite a large leap in terms of production. And of course, this was driven through technological advancements, and it was also a type of sweet spot, we could say, in time, because it occurred after the global financial crisis. And there was a lot of cheap money that was flowing around due to the Fed's low, near zero interest rates. So it was really driven by cheap money, and many of the companies were over-leveraged, to be absolutely fair about that. But that was, quite a large jump. Now, that by itself, of course, was not necessarily going to overburden, the oil market per se. I mean, you have, several other factors that were also, at play at the same time. But nonetheless, I mean, the shale gas revolution was quite phenomenal, and it was a revolution in I would say any sense of the word in terms of the technological developments that occurred. But the business model may not necessarily survive for the long term. So I would agree with what my colleague stated earlier. It's that you can't kill the technology and know-how. That is here to stay. But in terms of the business model that developed and indeed start to drive forth the shale gas boom in the U.S., shale oil and gas boom, that model may be dead in terms of cheap money that was fueling this and what have you. It was a bit of a bubble, to be fair about it.
Mr. Dargan, let me ask you about the situation of the oil prices in coming months, as you see it. The reason I'm asking is that if you look at the publications this week, last week, we are really awash with conspiracy theories, with a lot of manipulations. And I think that for ordinary folks, it's quite difficult to understand what the hell is going on, how far it will go. So what is your judgment? What are your assessment?
Well, I think right now it's not going to be a market decision per se. It's going to have to be a political decision. I mean, so any type of change that we're going to see in price is going to have to come from a type of, political decision that would be made by the major producers. And the market simply is not going to make that decision for us. I mean, so we...
You mean OPEC? When you say major producers, you mean OPEC?
OPEC primarily, and of course, Saudi Arabia as being, the principal member of OPEC, but Saudi Arabia is not going to make any production cuts if the other major producers do not as well. So we would have to see some type of concord. Although this is not unprecedented, we have seen this at the end of the Asian financial crisis in 1998, where indeed Norway, Russia, Mexico, and Saudi Arabia did agree informally to cut back on production. So we could actually start to see that occur again. But it would have to be a political decision because the market's not going to do it.
Yeah, one of the things I'd like to ask Mr. Dargan just real briefly is about how feasible do you think it is that Russia and OPEC will actually sit down and kind of hammer this out?
Well, I would say that the low oil price is not necessarily beneficial for all of the, for most of the major producers. I mean, so we can definitely see that there is some economic pain that is occurring. Now, Saudi Arabia still has approximately $630 billion in its financial reserves, and it's going through that at about a rate of about $5 to $6 billion per month or so. So it does still have cushioning, although we are starting to see these wave of budget deficits that are occurring, that have occurred actually since 2014. But Saudi Arabia is still able to maintain, at least I would say, for the next 2 or 3 years without significant economic pain. But in terms of some of the other countries, it could be a bit difficult. So I could potentially foresee that if some of the other major producers are willing to cut back on production, then we could have perhaps a repeat of what we saw in 1998, where we had the major producers that agreed upon reducing production. So I can see that happening.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Dargan. Right now we're going to switch over the line because we have our last guest on there, and that's Mr. Alexander Zotin. He's a financial analyst and Dengi Russia's leading Business Weekly.
Red Line.
Hi, thank you for coming on the program. I would like to ask you about how likely you think it is that Russia will cut production, let's just say on its own or in agreement with OPEC, but at the same time sacrifice market share just to raise the prices. How likely you think this is to happen?
Okay, so the main problem is the government budget. So then the price was $100 per barrel, almost $70. Went to the budget, roughly $35 that was export duty, and also roughly $35 was mineral extraction tax. So now when we have, say, $25 per barrel of euros, because euros is cheaper than Brent, we have only $10 go into the budget. So imagine the difference, $70 and $10. So the budget is in great pain now. But there are some ways to mitigate the situation, of course. So we can cut spending. That's the first way. Second way, we can use the reserve fund. We can use the resources from the reserve fund. Well, the third way is to devalue the ruble. Also, we can raise debt. So there are several ways to mitigate the situation. The situation is very bad, but it's not so catastrophic. And returning to your question about production cuts, it's possible. Yes, it's possible, but, it's very hard to discuss the situation with OPEC. With Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia told that the main aim for them is to maintain the market. So it's difficult, but it's possible.
Okay, thank you very much for your expert assessment, Mr. Zoltin. We're definitely going to keep our eyes on the possible solutions that you outlined for our listeners. But right now, we're all out of time, so we want to thank all of our guests for participating in this very interesting and very topical discussion, actually, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Andrei Fyodorov. He's Russia's former Deputy Foreign Minister and Director of the Center for Political Studies Think Tank, Mr. Justin Dargan, a global energy scholar at the University of Oxford, and finally, Mr. Alexander Zoltin, financial analyst at Dengie, Russia's leading business weekly. Following in our program, we have Poland, the black sheep of Europe, and Hassan Rouhani, to Europe with Dove. Stay with us.